All right. Good evening. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday, February 1st afternoon session. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Could you please call the first item?
Item 102, accept the City of Portland Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2016.
Mr. Rust, thank you. And if you could state your name for the record, you know how this works.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. For the record, my name is Ken Rust. I'm the City's Chief Financial Officer and Director of the Bureau of Financial Services, Revenue and Financial Services, excuse me. Joining me this afternoon is City Controller Michelle Kirby, and we will be presenting to you today the City's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016. We will be discussing with you highlights from the CAFR, and we'll be presenting you with additional information regarding the City's long-term fiscal health. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Michelle.
Wait a minute. You can't do that. That's what I did to you. Hi, Michelle.
I'll take over. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. The preparation of the annual CAFR is quite extensive, and it involves input from many of the City's bureaus, the City Auditor's Office, and our independent auditors, Moss Adams. The accounting division of BRFS has the responsibility of preparing the CAFR, ensuring its accuracy, and working with the auditors throughout the process. Several of the accounting division team members are here today, and if I may, I'd like to take a moment to recognize them for their hard work and dedication to the project. And this is the accounting division group back here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's important for financial information to be timely in order to be relevant to the readers. And I'm very pleased to be able to report to you that the June 30, 2016 CAFR was published on November 15th, which is 135 days after fiscal year end. This marks the earliest CAFR publication in over 10 years. It also puts us on track to meet our goal of CAFR 120, as we intend to publish the 2017 report by November 1st, 2017, or 120 days after fiscal year end. The CAFR provides a look at the city's finances as of our fiscal year end, June 30th. It's prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, which are issued by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, known as GASB. The independent auditor's opinion letter is included within the document and informs the reader about the accuracy of the financial information about the report presentation and its compliance with the accounting standards. Unfortunately, this required format and level of detail can make the CAFR very difficult for many to understand. So to address this issue, the accounting division looked into alternative ways to provide financial information to the community. So a popular report is designed to provide a summary level overview of a government's financial picture in an easy to understand format for those who do not need the level of detail found in the CAFR. The accounting division has prepared the city's first PAFR, and it looks like this.
And to the CAFR, which looks like this, you can see the smaller size.
Size alone gives you an idea. We hope this will be a useful tool that supplements the more detailed information found in the big CAFR. We welcome your feedback and thoughts on the report because we want it to be seen as a useful tool to communicate with the community. Hard copies were provided to your office last week, and the report can be found online with the rest of the city's annual financial reports. So turning our attention back to the CAFR, we'll discuss the highlights of the fiscal year 2015-16 CAFR. The good news is that our external auditors gave the city an unmodified or clean opinion and found no weaknesses or deficiencies in the city's accounting processes. In addition, the CAFR complies with state law, fund balances continue to grow, and we received the Government Finance Officers Association's Award for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the 35th consecutive year. The not-so-good news is that we continue to see a decline in the city's net position for governmental activities. In fact, the fiscal year 15-16 city net position for governmental activities declined approximately $273 million, which brings it to a negative $1.4
billion. Could you do me a favor and translate that for people who may be watching this?
We're going to talk a little bit more about that and try to tear that down so that it's more understandable to both the council and others who may be listening.
Thank you.
The negative trend is primarily the result of GASB accounting rules for pensions, but there are other factors involved. And I will now turn it over to Ken, back to him, who will provide you with more detailed assessment of the trend and the city's long-term financial health.
Thanks, Michelle. On the next chart, we show the 10-year trend in net position for the city. And you can see we have three lines on that particular chart. The blue line represents net position for governmental activities, which is primarily composed of the city's general fund and its transportation programs. Business activities are shown by the orange line and are primarily comprised of the city's big utilities, water and environmental services. And the green line is simply a summation of those two. And you can see on the trend line that there's been a downward trend, particularly on the governmental activities, over the last 10 years. It went negative last year at about $1.2 billion as we implemented the GASB 68 standard for pension accounting, and it increased, as Michelle mentioned, even more this year to about a negative $1.4 billion. In contrast, the orange line, or the business activities line, has had steady upward progress, representing the investment that those utilities are making in assets and the general continued strengthening of those utilities in terms of their net position. Overall, the trend is down, but it's heavily influenced by the underlying conditions of governmental activities. So what affects net position? Mayor, you were asking, you know, how do we understand this? And this is something we've been talking with council over the last couple of years. And I put together this chart, factors that affect net position in terms of decreasing it on a GAAP basis. And really what happens there is when expenses are greater than revenues, it has the effect of driving down our net position. So things that can drive down our net position are increases in pensions and other similar kinds of obligations and liabilities, increases in bonds payable with no offsetting assets, and when we have and incur non-cash expenses that contribute to expenses overall exceeding revenues. And I'll talk a little more about what that is. On the other side of the chart, we have things that can actually increase our net position. And when revenues exceed expenses on a GAAP basis, that gives rise to increasing net position. So the kinds of things that can contribute there are if we get grant funds to build something, that money comes to us and helps us build an asset, but we don't have a corresponding liability, net position goes up. If we fund capital improvements from cash flow, our net position goes up. We're not incurring any debt obligation that offsets that asset. And if we take surplus revenues and just hold on to them or pay down liabilities, that has the effect of increasing our net position. So those are the kinds of dynamics that are in play here that help you understand why would we be in this situation where our net position of governmental activities has declined to $1.4 billion. And what's really driving that primarily is FPD&R. There are other things as well, but the three big things that are the contributing factors are FPD&R, urban renewal indebtedness, where we take on the liability, PDC gets the bond proceeds and spends it. We don't tend to get an offsetting asset. And for those bonds where we've helped finance other activities in the region, we gave Metro $100 million for the Convention Center expansion. $74 million still sits on our books and records. And in exchange, we're in an intergovernmental agreement that we'll receive resources back, but we have a liability, no asset. And one of the big things that we have seen over the years is that depreciation, which is a non-cash expense, our annual depreciation in governmental activities is about $100 million greater than the capital investment that we make each year. And almost all of that is attributable to to transportation, where the amount of depreciation for transportation is about $110 million greater than the investment that they're making on an annual basis. So those are some of the underlying factors that are driving our net position in the direction that it's at. What I did on the next chart, and we talked about the last couple of years, is because of the way in which we are obligated to measure assets, revenues, and liabilities under GAAP and GASB, tends to underestimate or doesn't give us really full credit for some of the unique aspects associated with, particularly with FPDNR. And we've had a lot of discussions about FPDNR. FPDNR right now has an unfunded liability of $3.4 billion. So we have that liability on our balance sheet. We're reflecting that in our net position. But we also have a dedicated property tax levy that we use to pay that obligation, the expense of that each and every year. The value of that tax levy that we have on, that the voters approved back in 1948, the value of that on a GAAP basis is zero. But we know that that's how we're going to pay for it. We know it's always been sufficient to pay for it. In fact, we test that regularly to see that if it's adequate to be paid for it. So if we take that into account, that we really have this large liability, but we have a corresponding way to pay for it, that has a tremendous impact on the way in which we can measure net position. We also know that we've issued bonds for urban renewal, and about 25% of those monies come back to us in the form of an asset from PDC, but all of that debt is paid for from a property tax levy associated with urban renewal indebtedness. So it doesn't really create any liability for us in terms of our ability to pay that. We think it's fair to reflect that in our financials in a restating of the net position as well. And I had mentioned earlier the convention center bonds, where we have an intergovernmental agreement between the city, the county, and Metro, where we receive monies from the county to pay debt service on the bonds. It's always been fully adequate to do so. So when you make those adjustments to the GASB net position, you see what we've shown in this particular chart, and what happens is governmental activities over this 10-year period, they're pretty much flat, really not much change in that. When you take into some of the things that we're not allowed to include on a GAAP-GASB accounting basis. And then when you add to it the orange line, which is the business activities, which is trending upward, you see an overall net position trend that's stable to slightly growing. And we think that that's a better reflection of the city's true underlying net position and financial condition. So what does this mean, and what should we do? And we've had a lot of discussions about this over the last few years, is that we recognize that GAAP accounting has limitations in terms of accurately assessing financial condition, in our opinion. It tends to focus on liabilities and give us less focus or credit to contractual or other dedicated revenues that we receive over time, like the FPNR levy. Without adjusting for non-GAAP items, the net position can lead to focusing on the wrong trend. We certainly are concerned about FPDNR, but because of the way in which it's funded, it really isn't a problem. But if you didn't tear away and tease out some of the things going on here, you would focus all your energy on solving a problem that really doesn't exist and miss the problem that we really have to struggle with, and that is the perennial and consistent underinvestment in infrastructure. That's the more fundamental issue when you tear away the pieces of net position that we should be concerned about that I think we need to focus on, and we've been talking with council about that over the last couple of years and have made some considerable effort to increase the investment that we're making in our infrastructure. We've also been looking at how the most important thing we can do is make decisions that avoid short-term and long-term financial impairment, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. And one of the tasks I've been assigned to is to try to give the council an idea of what are those longer-term financial issues that we should be concerned about. And last year, presented to you the famous little fiscal health snapshot that I know was a way to distill down a lot of complex information in categories that I think you and others have found very useful. And when I started looking at the things that you should be concerned about and be paying attention to, I looked at three general categories of fiscal activity that we should be always watching. One are our long-term liabilities, PERS, FPDNR, and other post-employment benefits. PERS, as I mentioned last year, concerns me because it is heavily reliant on high levels of investment returns each and every year. We have an unfunded liability with PERS. We expect that unfunded liability will likely be growing due to things like overturning of the Morrow decision, which had the effect of reversing some of the decisions that would have helped save governments like Portland on their pensions. But in 2015, earnings were low for the pension fund. It earned about 2.1%. It needs at least 7.5% or more to stay even. This year was better. Probably the only thing that good that came out of the election was the stock market went nuts in the last quarter of the year. And we now ended up with something a little over 7% earnings for the year for PERS. Still didn't hit the requirement of 7.5% plus the ability for them to pay COLA. So even though that was not a bad year, we know we're going to fall behind. So PERS makes me nervous about its continuing impact on the city. FBDNR, in the contrast, I have said that currently I think it's in green status. I think it stays in green status. Even though we had some increases in salary costs in a wage settlement that increased police cost, also rolls through to FPDNR pension costs. The most recent levy adequacy study, which was completed about a week ago, simulates potential ranges of cost in real market value property tax growth over a 40-year time period. The probability that the levy will be inadequate over that 40 years has declined to only a 2.6% probability. The last time they did it, it was a 4% probability. So FPDNR, if the tax system being stable the way it is, and as long as we have reasonable real market value growth, I don't believe that's something that we need to worry about. We always have to watch it. Our OPEB liabilities year over year actually declined. And that's another thing that we continue to watch and monitor because we're on a pay-as-you-go funding system for that. And that's the way we've advised council to proceed with it since we were required to begin reporting that back in, I think, 2008. When we look at infrastructure, we know that there's a lot of different areas that we have to pay attention to. The utilities, I feel pretty comfortable with, have a stable and secure funding plan. They have a lot of needs in front of them, but I'm confident that they're going to be able to continue making the investment necessary. I think it's cautionary that we should be always watching that, but I'm not as concerned about that particular area of the city's infrastructure assets than I am with certain other areas. Transportation is the one that we clearly have the most concern about. It's currently in red status. It stays in red status. We've made some improvements over the last year. We have a gas tax. We have a heavy vehicle surcharge and things like that that's helpful. But we know that the underinvestment's at least $100 million a year, and those monies are primarily oriented at maintenance. So we know that that's going to be a continuing problem, one that we have to focus on.
Can I ask you a question on that, Ken?
Certainly.
So I get the shortfall as far as sufficiency and resources to maintain the capital assets that we have in place. But this is a fiscal report, and the reality is fiscally we're not going to spend more resource than we have. So when you're talking about the CAFR and the issues that you take up in the CAFR, are you looking at the declining value of the asset? Is that why this is on the report?
That's the linkage, Mayor, is that the net position is an indicator that by itself suggests that the city may be in a position where over time it will be less able to continue and maintain the services that it's currently providing. So when we look at what's causing the decline in net position, we tear apart these little elements of it. And one of the areas that we have to pay attention to is the underinvestment in infrastructure. Because going forward, if we don't address that, the ability of that infrastructure to provide the services that we expect will decline as well. And so that can lead to further impairment of our ability to provide those services.
But is it actually the deterioration of the asset that rises it to the level that it's on the CAFR? I mean, I can think of other services, mental health services in the community, for example, that are not funded to the degree that they need to be, yet that's not on the CAFR. So is transportation there because of the value of the asset deteriorating, or why does it rise to the level of, you know, what gets in the CAFR and what doesn't?
What's in the, and that's a good question, what's in the CAFR are things that are financial assets and liabilities that were required to record under GAAP GASB.
Okay.
There are a lot of other things, clearly, that don't have those kinds of values that we bring onto our financial statement that are important and arguably are even more important. But we're looking at those kinds of things that we're required to capture under GAAP accounting. And what we see there is a consistent underinvestment. And there's a lot of interesting things about transportation. We've had the discussion last year, is that we could spend $100 million on transportation, repaving roads, making them very smooth. But it may not be necessarily a capital investment. If it isn't capitalizable, it won't help us close that gap between depreciation and capital investment, because we have a lot of maintenance things. So I'm not saying that that by itself is something that is going that we have to focus on and solve completely, but it's an indicator, and I think the indicator is important about when we have an underinvestment, where does that take us? The accounting information is useful and instructive, but it doesn't tell you all of what you need to do. But if you follow it to its logical conclusion, you do end up with a significantly poorer infrastructure that can't provide services. People can't rely on it to get to and from work. Businesses can't rely on it to get goods and services in and out of the city. And it starts to impair other kinds of things, like the ability to grow wealth in the community and generate resources for other kinds of programs like mental health.
And I'm sorry to my colleagues for asking elementary questions. Could you go back to the report? Ugh, take me off that. Can you go back to the dashboard?
Yes.
Which
so the okay, so okay, good. All right, good. Thank you. That's helpful to me. I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I have just a question off the actually, you know what my question is, Ken. So what's your answer?
The answer is the utilities are still in yellow status. And we have done some work on the kinds of things and attributes and factors to take into consideration that would move them from yellow to green status, and things like being in regulatory compliance, maintenance of their infrastructure at a certain level, rates and charges trending towards inflation, things like that. And generally speaking, you know, BES is getting very close to turning to green status. Water is probably a shade of yellow moving to it. I don't have an orange I can't put in here, so I can't figure out what the right color is.
We've been actively lobbying for just a split circle.
Yeah, and I haven't figured out how to do that yet. Anyway.
But just to be clear, because I think it's important when you're in yellow status and you're encouraging us to move towards green, it's important that we identify what are the factors that you're considering. And so maintaining our high credit rating, mm-hmm. so we can borrow money at low interest rates. Remaining in compliance with all of our regulatory requirements, which, of course, at least recently has gotten more complicated because we're not sure where the regulatory environment's going in Washington, D.C., and it could go one of a number of ways. Continuing to invest in replacing aging infrastructure and in resilience, which our rating agencies give us credit for, and that often means rate increases above ordinary inflation. So that do we have the political will to continue to do that? And as I understand it, the reason that we're not quite at green is that a number of these factors are variable. And despite our best efforts, there are some things that are out of our control. So you've given us a yellow and an admonition to continue. Is that fair?
That's correct. I'd like to have stretch goals for you, you know.
Okay. Very good.
The last category, we've talked about infrastructure liabilities, the utilities. We have others in the form of parks and housing, which has become a bigger issue than we've had in the past. We've made a lot of progress. We're doing a lot of great work, but we know that the need is great as well. So I'm concerned long-term about our ability to continue to fund at the level necessary, but we have done a lot of good things, and we're going to have to continue to pay attention there. We have legacy liabilities associated with River Superfund site and Columbia River levees, and we're working through that as well. So those are things that we need to pay attention to. And, of course, employee costs is the last category. Things that drive our costs up on employee side, wages, salaries, health benefits, pension benefits, and where we put people all contribute to a potential for us to see expenses associated with employees growing faster than our revenues, and that creates problems for us to manage over the longer haul. So those are, when I met with you last year, those were the things that I identified as being issues for us to pay attention to, not just short term, but on the longer term as well.
So at this point, we don't own any housing. So what kind of housing goes into the grid here that you assess us on as being red or whatever it is, orange, yellow?
We do own one housing project. That's Headwaters. That's one that was done a number of years ago. And with the new authorization that we received from the voters and also some of the dedication of short-term rental, if we're going to finance and help build housing, for a lot of complex reasons, we will probably be owners of housing because that type of financing can only be used if we're an owner. The housing But we're not just doing it. We also have a lot of tax increment resources being devoted to housing that we support the development of affordable housing through more traditional means. So the housing thing isn't so much what we own, but we know that we have a big need, and we know the city is going to be asked to support adding resources to meet that need, whether we're the owner or we're contributing that in the form of grant funds to developers that are building affordable housing on our behalf. So that's why I've added that into that particular category, because that's an expanding piece of infrastructure for the city.
Does the Housing Bureau own the headquarters?
The city of Portland owns that. It's managed. I mean, it was a project developed by PDC. It was financed by city general fund-backed revenue bonds, and it's owned by the city of Portland.
So does this chart show any Portland Development Commission assets as well?
No.
And so is that housing that's relatively new, or has that been on before, now that we're thinking we have passed the bond and we're going to become an owner of public housing?
I believe I had it on there last year as well, Commissioner. I could check that. But it was an issue last year, but I think the issue is becoming bigger,
right,
is my concern.
So paradoxically, the choice that we've made to provide more housing for people who need it then puts our city financial condition into a worse place. Is that correct?
I would say that if... a worse place in the sense that and I had a really interesting conference I went to last week, was the National Federation of Municipal Analysts. So it's a room full of people that just rate bond stuff for municipal governments. And it was a session on distressed credits, which we're not one. I was on a panel called Managing the Divides, a lot of the divisions in communities and across the country, rural, urban, urban, suburban. And they were intrigued what Portland was trying to do. I was talking about, you know, in Portland, we recognize this is a big issue. And we're concerned about the impact of inequality and equity in our community and the work we're doing around racial equity planning and trying to make a more deliberate decision about the allocation of resources to deal with some of those divides, and housing being a very big piece of that. And so when you start thinking about that, my scorecard is really financial-oriented, but kind of to what the mayor was saying, there might be a whole bunch of other things that we need to be measuring as well. How are we doing in terms of closing the affordability and housing gap, the income inequity gap, the access to, fully formed neighborhoods and parks and things like that? Those are important metrics that might actually determine the longer-term sustainability and fiscal health of a community, much like these other more traditional financial measures. Because if I was a bond buyer and I had a choice between two bonds, and they each rated the same, but one community is doing a lot better job at bridging these divides to make the community more resilient, sustainable, and supportive, and a place that people want to come, invest, grow wealth, and generate income and tax revenues for the government longer term, where would I put my money? And so the housing piece is an interesting, you know, way to start thinking about, even though we could make that number whatever we want to make, but the more we do there, it might make our community a better place to live long term, and that has important financial impacts and implications for the city of Portland.
That's very helpful.
And I'm sorry I missed part of that when I stepped outside for a second. You've referred to the City Lights model, which we use for the prior council used for the headwaters. We considered City Lights for Gray's Landing during the recession because we ran out of financing tools, but we decided to go a different route. But most of the housing that we invest in, we don't own. We just have a regulatory agreement.
That's correct.
So I apologize, I missed your colloquy with Commissioner Fritz. But so we're putting a lot of money into housing, but we don't own it. And how is that reflected on our balance sheet?
Those assets aren't reflected on our balance sheet, and we don't generally have liabilities associated with that. We grant funds and do things with PDC resources. Now, some of those PDC resources actually are liabilities on our balance sheet. But because we have a tax revenue associated with it, it doesn't really impair us. Now, one of the distinctions, though, that's different with housing, and I know Commissioner Saltzman's learned quite a bit about this over the last few months. We've all learned a lot about it, is that the voter-approved GO bonds and also the dedication of short-term rental taxes to maybe support leveraging of financing, if it's backed by the general fund, has the city's general fund credit or unlimited taxing power behind it, creates a lending a credit issue under the state constitution and under city charter, and makes it very difficult, I won't say impossible, but so far it's been pretty much impossible to figure out a way in which we can give monies to developers to develop through some sort of an agreement projects for us without tripping into this lending and credit issue. So hence, we may be actually more directly involved in direct ownership, like the Ellington apartments. So
we may just end up owning it and then partnering with HomeFord or someone to
manage
help do the management.
That's correct.
And that then shows up on our balance sheet.
Yes, and we'll have we have a liability, we issue bonds, but we have an asset, we have the housing.
But that's actually good for our...
It's neutral, at least. It's not negative. Oftentimes, we get into these asymmetrical financial decisions where we create the liability. We don't get the asset. We did good things with it, but our net position is hurt by it. So, for example, when we give the county $80-plus million for our contribution to the Selwood Bridge, we're going to finance that with gas tax revenue bonds. That liability is on our balance sheet. The asset is on the county's balance sheet, and so our net position looks worse. Now, is that a bad decision? Well, it's a very important asset. It's an important arterial and bridge, and it will be resilient in an earthquake. But it was a good decision for the community, but from a narrow financial standpoint, not necessarily one that makes our balance sheet look better. So those are the kinds of things that we have to be mindful of. Just quickly finish off here. You know, we've talked with you last year about long-term. Fundamentally, the city has a math problem, and that's that its expenses are growing faster than revenues, and we have to be mindful of that, that there are things that are going on systemically that we have to pay attention to. And what we're going to have to do to bring that into balance, we have to cut expenses, reduce programs or services, increase revenues, or some combination of the above. And you can see that right this year. We're in a budget process right now, and we're cutting budgets. But general fund revenues are growing. They're going to be higher than they've ever been. And so we already see the tension in that mismatch between the rate of expenditure growth and the rate of revenue growth. And imagine a slowdown in the economy or a recession where we see a decline in those revenues. Those are the kinds of things that we have to be mindful of, because if we don't start thinking about how we are going to try to manage those long-term costs, we will be perennially cutting budgets. And that's something important that to think about as you make those budgetary decisions now into the future. I just want to summarize where we've been. It's been a long discussion, and I appreciate that opportunity. But, you know, we are happy to present to you the CAFR for fiscal year ending 2016. It, as Michelle mentioned, it complies with all required accounting standards. We have an unmodified or clean opinion from our outside auditor, and you'll hear more from them this afternoon. Our budget practices have ensured that the city adopts a balanced budget each year, and we have no audit deficiencies to report. So we're very proud of that. Our current financial position continues to strengthen. Overall fund balances for the city is over $600 million. The general fund has slightly over $100 million. We think that making these non-GAAP adjustments that we talked about, how we look at FPD&R and some of these other things that make our net position look odd, are better ways to really get a sense of the city's real financial position and also understand the kinds of things that we should be paying attention to. We think that that's also more reflective of the fact that the city's a AAA rated credit and has been that way for 40 years. Remember, the CAFR is simply a snapshot at a point of time. Future challenges can affect the fiscal health of the city, but we've weathered many financial storms. And by developing good practices and policies now and making decisions based on that, you know, we can make sure that we can sustain a strong financial performance for the city and the ability to maintain the services that our citizens depend on into the future. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Any questions from the council? Carla, is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Is there anybody you'd like to testify? 3 minutes. Keep it on point, please. Name for the record.
I'm Shedrick Wilkins, and I believe that in the future the city will have to cut social services. I believe that the city does things by building things like bridges, roads, infrastructure. But I believe this, that only the federal government and the state government can decide the merits of social programs and not the city. And I think in the future there'll be the schools, for example, will start begging the city for money and the city will just have to turn away. Again, social services is very hard to say whether you need to hire people to manage that. And there are certain mayors that got over this. I remember Bud Clark, for example, was drafted. He was a Republican by the Democrats because the city of Portland was going in debt. And Mayor Clark actually won re-election and managed to cut the budget and got on the Johnny Carson show.
Mayor, I move to accept the report.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Well, thank you once again for a very clear presentation. Always the work of Chief Financial Officer Ken Rust is fabulous. City Controller Michelle Kirby. I think City Controller is maybe one of my favorite titles for anybody coming to work in the city that is controlling a lot of money and also making sure that there are controls on that money. This popular financial report is definitely an improvement, a new thing that's making things much clearer for the population and the neighbors here in Portland. So thank you very much for all your good work. Aye.
Fish.
I want to echo everything Commissioner Fritz has said, and I very much appreciate the way you're laying out the information and the very clear presentation today. Thank you for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yes, thank you for your good work, and I definitely vote for the popular report. It's great. Aye.
You Daily.
Thank you for your work. I'm feeling a little left out because I don't have a copy of the popular report, but I will support it nevertheless. Aye.
Wheeler.
Enthusiastically supportive. Thank you. This is great. And as you can note, sometimes in government we tend to write reports for ourselves. And in doing so, we're unintentionally excluding the public who may or may not have CPAs and knowledge of finance and whatnot. And ultimately, it's their city. They face the consequences, for better or worse, of how we manage our fiscal situation. So I think this is a really great report, and I appreciate it. Enthusiastic eye. The report is accepted.